97.5 The Fanatic.
What's going on, y'all? 97.5 The Fanatic, 10:01 on this Monday night, broadcasting from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast. We, of course, thank Joe Torti for the work that he did from 6 to 10. We're always thrilled to share those 2 hours with him. We run solo with Josh Raybeck here as well. So it's never solo because Josh is here. So, you know, we do our thing as we broadcast from the Xfinity studio. Only from Comcast in the numbers, 610-632-0975. If you want to jump in and join in on any of the conversation that we were having. And we got a lot of tweets from everything with Yarone Weitzman here on the station. A lot of tweets about the interview that we had with him in the 8 o'clock hour. Some of the things that he said, some of the things that people, based off of Josh's great tweet that he put out there, asking the question, when you look back on the start of the Sixers rebuild to now, what moment stands out the most to you? Also, was it a partial success with missteps? Will it be complete disaster? Will it be a complete disaster without a championship? So we've gotten a lot of stuff here on Twitter from that. So we'll read a lot. We'll try to get through as much as we can, as we always try to do. Try to mix in the tweets, have the conversation overall, and the numbers once again, 610-632-0975. Having Yarone on, it was an interesting conversation to have with him and Joe about everything that happened with the rebuild and how it went. And I never really thought we would get into this tonight. Sometimes you have guests on, it's good stuff to have out there. He's promoting a book. It's an interesting story. We were right in the middle of it. We've seen it from day one with Sam Hinkie to Brett Brown to Elton Brand and the players all across the board, whether they are still here, whether they have moved on to other places. The story is very long. The story is very interesting. That's why it took over basketball the way it did. That's why it was so intriguing. That's why the NBA, if you believe, jumped in. And when they jumped in, they wanted to make sure that they tried to rectify whatever problems that they had quickly, because it was that bad. And it was embarrassing when they were losing the way that they were losing. The 10-win season was awful. And I know a lot of people, you felt like you had to sit through it, of course, because you locked in on the rebuild. And I remember, even when I would talk about it and everyone knew that I was against how they were going about it, there were some points where people who were in favor of the entire thing were starting to get really frustrated with what it was, with the constant losing, the players out there on the floor trying their best but not belonging in the NBA, unfortunately for those players, and the 10-win season where they had to trade for Ish Smith right around Christmas. They were on a West Coast trip, the Disney on Ice trip, where they always hit the road, and they would go out west and play a 5-game road trip, come back after the new year, and they would go out there and do what they needed to do. They had no wins. They were 0-whatever, and at that point, they had to make a move and bring Ish Smith in. I mean, we all remember it. We don't remember the score necessarily, but we remember Ish Smith having an impact on the game in Phoenix, picking up their first win of the season. It was still bad going forward. They had 2 wins, I believe, in a quick stretch right there in the time that he got here to Philadelphia, well, joined the team out west. And there were people really talking about Ish Smith is now the MVP of the team. Jokingly, Ish Smith is the MVP of the season because of how he turned things around when they were 0-4, a big number on that season. So it will always be a big-time story in the history of Philadelphia 76ers basketball. The NBA had to jump in and bring in Jerry Colangelo first. Jerry Colangelo brought in Brian Colangelo. I really didn't think it would happen. And ultimately, that's what they went with. And we know how everything turned out, with him having to walk away with the burner account with he and his wife. And Jerry ticked off and threatening the 76ers because he was still technically part of the team as an advisor and like a consultant for the team overall. And you just started to look at things and say, my goodness. But I was in when they brought in Jerry. I was in when they decided to bring in Brian, even though I didn't think that that was the route that they would go. I didn't think that they would do that with the nepotism overall with it. We know how it turned out. And it was wrong. I was wrong with that. But I don't know that I would have been wrong that Sam Hinkie should have stayed in the job. We never know what would have happened, whether he would have accelerated things, whether he would have kept it going as long as possible, because there was never really any indication, because he never told you what he was going to do. He told you things that he liked to do with the assets, but he would openly tell you he's not telling you what he wanted to do, because you're going to give the other general managers around the NBA an advantage, and he did not want to do that. He was about his secrecy and never sharing anything. As Jerome pointed out, yes, he would talk to people behind the scenes very much, but he did not want you speaking about it publicly at all. When Jerome said that he spoke to Sam Hinkie, when he spoke to Sam Hinkie, he spoke to him and Sam Hinkie said, "I do not want my story to be told." And that's the type of guy that he is. He simply likes to play the background, do what he needs to do, and try to fleece all of these other teams, which is his job. But there were other things that went along with his job that he simply was not interested in, and that was no way to run an NBA franchise. There are folks around the NBA who felt like, again, that it was too soon. There were folks that felt like the NBA stepped in when they shouldn't have. And there were folks who felt like, hey, he has to go because look at what he's doing with all of these other things, like the agents and the Andre Kirilenko story that I bring up, so on and so forth. And there are a lot of people who simply stand by what Sam Hinkie did with that rebuild at that time. I stand by. I was never in favor of it. I always stated that while I was never in favor of it, I understood what he was trying to do. But just because I understand, we all can look at things and understand why you're trying to do one thing and it can necessarily not hit with you when you do the other and you see a way in which things can be better. We all see that. So we don't know that he was right. We don't know that he was wrong. We don't know that I was right or that I was wrong. It's an opinion based off of what he decided to do. I never liked it. Never wanted to see it. Have they gotten things from it? Absolutely. It's hard not to. You give him credit for the things that he did, and as a result, you wind up with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. So, but here's the thing. When we talk about Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons being the prize of it, aren't there still questions? Don't we still have these conversations where we shouldn't be talking about this team in the way that we are, even though technically, quote unquote, they're still a young duo of these two stars, Simmons and Embiid, but they've been in the league for 6 and 4 years respectively, Embiid and Simmons, and they still have their issues, but you also see younger players advancing as well. And yes, we can go back to Jordan didn't do it until this year. Kobe didn't do it until this particular year, and he needed Shaq to do it. LeBron James, it took him this amount of years to do all that stuff. You're absolutely right. They've been in position to advance themselves within this league, advance overall with what they've done in terms of growing in this league, especially as a duo. So while it may have worked in a sense in getting two young star players in Embiid and Simmons, it is still a question mark of overall, did it work? Because these two players still have some growing to do as players overall. They've squandered some opportunities over the past two seasons in the second round against Boston and Toronto, specifically Toronto when you reach Game 7. But you can also look at the Boston series and say, man, you had a golden opportunity to at least. The goal was never to get to the NBA Finals. It was to go as far as possible, and it looked like there was a path, an avenue for you to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, face LeBron James, lose with dignity, right? And regroup for the next year when you get back on the floor for the 76ers' next run. Maybe some more reinforcements. Brett Brown has made a deep run. He has confidence. He has shown that he can win against some of the other elite coaches in the NBA. They haven't gotten past the second round. Brown is still here. There's a question mark about that now if they do not advance past the second round this year or even the Eastern Conference Finals this season and have a longer run than they've had in the past. Last year, getting to Game 7 in the second round, that helped him save his job. With that, he comes out at his open introductory press conference with the media for the coaches' luncheon that he has every year. It's always a great time. to get together before the season and to get the outlook from the head coach. 60 wins. That's what he said. Number one seed in the Eastern Conference. That's what he said. He said a lot of great things. Smash mouth offense, bully ball defense. And this team, unfortunately, right now is in sixth place in the Eastern Conference. And that's probably where they're going to end up, five or six in the East, facing either Miami or the Boston Celtics in the first round. And not ideal right now. Can you still look at a situation where they can win that first round matchup? Possibly. But you would need Embiid to be healthy as possible. And you also need Simmons to also be in some sort of game-playing playoff shape in order for them to get the best out of their young stars in the postseason to make another push for a deep run in the playoffs. And if they do not, in this particular case, I think we all understand. I even believe that the head coach knows this as well. If they don't make this run that we all thought, that they openly spoke about preseason, kept telling us to wait until Christmas to understand where the lineup would be, to wait till the first and second thirds of the season as Brown broke them down, and then certainly when it got to the playoffs, that this team was built for the postseason. Injuries happen in the league, but even then, that may not be enough to save one's job in this particular case that Brett Brown is now facing. There's a lot of pressure on Brett Brown to perform in the postseason to help guide his team past the second round, hopefully past the third round, and into the NBA Finals. They have a lot of work to do. There's a lot to still discuss about what the situation is and was with the entire rebuild. It was a great conversation with Yaron, with Joe Torti, about the entire rebuild, what is in his book, some of the things that we may not know. Listen, I think you guys know I don't sit here and talk about a lot of things that I know and boast and point my finger and say I know more than you. I share what I share when I share it, when I get it. And there, yeah, certainly some other things that I may hear that I don't necessarily say on the air or tweet out on social media. But he wrote a book and he has some stuff in there and I can't wait to read it and get a sense of maybe some other things that I do not know about. I did not know about the Jimmy Butler, Brian Colangelo conversation to convince him and buy into Philadelphia. It didn't work overall because Jimmy Butler decided to leave and go to Miami where he had his own team. What were the reasons? I don't know. Could it have been the fit with Simmons? Could it have been the coaching with Brett Brown? Or the lack of accountability with Brett Brown when it comes to a lot of things with the 76ers that we've openly talked about here on this particular show for a lot of years now. So if you heard the interview and you have some thoughts on some of the things that he said, of course, not giving out a lot, but giving enough and just some intrigue overall with his book that is coming out next week on the 17th. I look forward to reading it and seeing what he had to say in the book, some of the other nuggets that he got. I can't believe that he's very popular with the 76ers organization after writing this book. But hey, it is what it is. He's a journalist and he's going to do what he does. And he's certainly gaining a lot of just interest around the basketball world with this particular book that is coming out. And I love that Sam Hinkie decided not to talk about and contribute to the book. That is so Sam Hinkie. So we're with you until midnight. 610-632-0975. Just your general thoughts on how things are right now. They have 17 games remaining on 18 games remaining on the season now after losing to Golden State, which I am not happy about because they should have won that game. There was no reason whatsoever for the Golden State Warriors to be in that particular game.
And that team sucks.
Talk about, yes, they do. They are the worst team in the NBA. We openly talk about the getaway game when the final game of a West Coast road trip or even a long trip in general. The Sixers were playing. They were not dogging it because it was the final game. They got beat by the Golden State Warriors. Eric Paschal beat them. Damian Lee beat them. The same for Mulder, who was on a 10-day contract, beat them in that game, and they suffered their 24th loss of the season on the road yet again. 10-24 on the road for the Golden State Warriors with, I believe, 7 games remaining now away from the center. Winnable games, but still no confidence that they can go on the road and get the job done like they need to. So when we talk about them advancing in the postseason the way that they need to, they need to find a way to to win on the road. Do they have their full complement of players? No, they do not. But when, even when they did not show me enough that they can win on the road. Jekyll and Hyde team they are. They have to get it together. There's a lot to talk about with the team currently, a lot to talk about with the team over the last couple of seasons during the rebuild, and I would love to get your thoughts as we talk to you on the phone, 610-632-0975, and also on Twitter. We'll continue to send out the tweets that we get. We'll read some of those on the air because we have some really good stuff based off of what a lot of people had to say. And I'll ask this as we go until midnight. One question. One good, one really bad with the 7 years of the rebuild. While it's still going on in terms of the season, 18 games left, the rebuild is done. The rebuild for me was done 2 years ago when they made the postseason. That's it. Assets, yes, they still carried over, but it was done. You found your two young stars. You were able to acquire other players in J.J. Redick and later on Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris as well. It was about winning, and they've had some other opportunities. The other thing was trying to make sure you got it done to save your coach's job, and that's in jeopardy if they do not advance deeper in the season this time around for their third straight playoff appearance. One good, one bad during the rebuild. I think that's pretty easy for a lot of people. So if I jump in real fast and say one good, obviously landing Joel Embiid was good. Even with the questions, you have a top 10 potentially top 5 player in the league. And one really bad, Markelle Fultz. We don't know if it was going to be Jason Tatum, but what they got was Markelle Fultz, and it did not work out. That was the third star, potentially. That was the secondary ball handler that you would have with Ben Simmons. And even if it was Jason Tatum, then you can just look at it the other way and say, man, those three guys together, if it were to work, you have a bona fide scorer right there in Jason Tatum, year number three, first-time All-Star. And I think he's going to be a perennial All-Star for years to come, along with Simmons and Embiid. And he plays for your Atlantic Division rival, and you could have possibly had him for years next to those two guys. And how about this? You never want to look at it this way, but if things went south and you had to move one of those two, wouldn't you feel much better if you moved one of those two but still had Jason Tatum to go along with that guy? So I'll start there and ask you that as well. 610-632-0975. We'll get to Josh Rabick and his thoughts on that also as we go until midnight. 610-632-0975. Devon Givens with you until midnight. Let's start things off in the 10 o'clock hour with Chuck and Bluebell next on 97.5. What's happening, Chuck?
Hey, how are you, Devon?
Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. A couple points, and you took the bad right out of my mouth. I want to say... My bad.
But you can explain it how you want to explain it.
And that was like, you know, what I wanted to say is that we weren't put in the position that we had to draft Tatum. That's the thing. That's my bad. Like, because I was on board with Fultz, and yeah, I guess a lot of people were too.
I was.
But like, how good would it have been if we were, you know, if we were in the position that we were forced to take Tatum, even if it wasn't your number one player? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my bad. But I want to make a point. And I first want to say I'm a huge fan, and I love Embiid, I love Simmons, but I'm starting to think that even if we move on from Brett Brown, which we probably will, that it's not going to matter, and I'm starting to think it's a player problem, more Simmons than Embiid, because I think with the right players, Embiid could and will win a championship. I just think Simmons not caring enough and not wanting to win enough is going to really hurt us long term, and possibly could cost us never winning the championship with this group, which is a complete failure. And that's what I'm really, and I'm definitely afraid of that, but I'm starting to think that's going to become true.
And here's the funny thing that you say that, Chuck. So on my way in, of course, listening to Joe Torti, one of my best friends called me. He wanted to talk before we got on the air tonight, and he said, listen, I want to see more of the offense run through Ben Simmons. So, to your point, look at what we're talking about, Chuck. The fact that, as you say, the roster is flawed with these two, and it may still work. I don't see that. I don't see where the situation that we're finally done and we've seen the best and they cannot fit, because they've won a lot of games together. Here's the thing. we're having this conversation about these two guys that play totally where things may not fit, you know, seemingly the way you want it, right? Overall, they're both very unique. And he's one way, one of my best friends, and you're another way where you're tired of Simmons. He wants more of Simmons. And we shouldn't even be having that conversation at this point after the rebuild, after what you've acquired, after seeing these guys play together in the 50-plus wins for back-to-back seasons and another playoff berth this year. We shouldn't even be having that conversation anymore.
And that's so frustrating because we really shouldn't be sitting here. You know, it's almost, you know, halfway through March, and, you know, we still have questions. And, I mean, personally, I have zero faith. I mean, that I'm not a betting man, but that will win a first series. I can't say that.
Not when you're the under.
You can't win on the road. You know, if you don't have a killer mentality player, and don't get me wrong, Embiid can take over games, but does anyone have faith that he's going to take over 5 out of 7 games in a 7-game series? I want to say yes, but I can't.
Right. You can arguably say that when you step on that floor in any series, even if it's Miami or Boston, as good as Tatum has been, that Joel Embiid is the best player on the floor every single night. Will he be that every single night, though?
We can't say that. And I'll tell you what, if it's Miami, I'm scared. I really would rather have Boston. I really think that we'll lose the first round. We have Miami.
Wow. Yeah, man. Listen, right now I believe it's still Boston. Before we hang up with you, let me just check one more time. It is Boston right now. They're the 6th seed, so they would face the Boston Celtics in that first round matchup, Chuck, and I'm sure you won't have confidence in that either, even though they beat them 3-1 during the season series. Chuck, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate you starting things off in the 10 o'clock hour. 610-632-0975. Milwaukee and Toronto have clinched playoff spots in the Eastern Conference. Boston right there in the 3 spot. Miami 4, Indiana 5 with a 4-game on the 76ers at 6. Brooklyn, who fired their head coach Kenny Atkinson, 7. Orlando 8th in rounding out the Eastern Conference playoffs right now. So we're talking about, of course, what we spoke to Yaron Weitzman about with his book, The Rebuild Overall, and speaking about this team right now, because I thought that was a ridiculous loss to the Golden State Warriors on Saturday night. 610-632-0975, 10-24 away from the center. They're back at home on Wednesday. 28-2 they are. They will host the Detroit Pistons, and I'm sure they'll beat them because they should. So 610-632-0975, and they don't lose at home. We're talking about it. On the other side, we'll also hear from Josh Rabick and get his thoughts on the good and the bad of the rebuild. Two things that stand out to you during that time right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic. 10:29, 97.5, The Fanatic.
How many people got messed up by the daylight savings time? Josh and I were just talking about this. I don't know. I got a little screwed up. Devon Gibbons with you. Josh Rabick producing the show. 610-632-0975. I was telling Josh, I got up early, like 9 o'clock, went to bed late. So when I went to bed late on Saturday night, of course, it's like, all right, it's like 2 o'clock, whatever. Then boom, next thing you know, the clock says 3:30. It's like, wait a minute, hold on. And yeah, I was up to see it change. I'm like, I needed to lay down. And so I laid down, woke up at 9, get up at 9, do my workout for my knee, still doing my PT for my ACL, having stuff to do at home. And I'm doing it, and I'm banging it out all day, just doing some different things, elliptical and some of the other things that I'm supposed to do, the exercises and the resistance bands, the planking and all kinds of stuff that I have to do. And it's like, all right, got to do some stuff with the kids, need to eat some food. Phoenix plays at 6 o'clock our time, 3 o'clock on the West Coast. And I want to catch that because it's an early game. I don't have to stay up late now to watch that. Next thing I know, I'm out. I took like a 3 hour nap. Didn't even woke up and I'm like, yo, it's halftime already. So I don't know. Kind of, I guess it threw me off a little bit yesterday. Josh, did it get you a little bit before we get to the phones? Gene, you're going to be first. 610-632-0975. Did it get you a little?
Yeah, and I have a problem catching up. So I was out Saturday night. I was watching the UFC fights. By the time I get home, it would have been 2 a.m. It switches over to 3 a.m. Same thing as you.
See?
You get up early in the morning, your body just pops up. And then once you get like halfway through the day, you settle in, you eat some food, and you sit back down, your body says, all right, it's time to shut back down.
And I had some food that I got from when we did the show on Saturday night, and it was fantastic. We were at the Green Parrot, right? So we're at the Green Parrot, and I get the food, and they took care of me, of course, and took Andrew and all the guys. We were all there. It was fantastic, and I had some of the stuff left over, and I was like, oh, I gotta knock these things off. So I'm going to have a nice little lunch and do what I need to do. Man, that stuff knocked me out, and that's exactly what I get. But it was a good nap, a good win that we got out there on the West Coast, and it was a good weekend overall. But the daylight savings, while I'm happy because we're starting to push forward to the spring, man, threw me off a little bit. And I guess when you have the busy schedule like we do with the weird things that how our schedule is sometimes, you know, you get caught up a little bit on the weekend when you get a little bit of downtime. 610-632-0975. We'll get to some of the tweets as well with this. A friend of mine I wanted to give hit us up on a text board as we were talking about this stuff earlier with Joe Torti. He had this great one, and I'm going to give this one since we brought to bring Gene on and we have Andrew and everybody else. 610-632-0975. Hinkie was a failure. Credit a culture and a coach who has no idea how to win. Miss with Okafor, miss with Noel. We could go on and on. That's what a lot of people have to say about that. Also, another one we got from another guy on the text board, another friend. Not a huge book reader, but that's one I might have to pick up. A little bit of interest there. A little bit. So let's go to the phone, 610-632-0975. Gene in Northeast, thanks for hanging on, man. You're next on The Fanatic.
Hey, what's going on? I really love your show, man. I love listening to you talk basketball.
Gene.
I'm a huge basketball fan myself.
Appreciate it. Thank
you. No problem. If Hinkie was a failure, what would you consider Colangelo and Brand? Because if Hinkie was a failure, I mean, let me ask you a serious question. Do you think you could have GM'd the Sixers better in the last 4 years than Colangelo and Brand? You.
I've missed on some as well, but I hear what you're saying.
I mean, it's been terrible. They miss on everything. Now, listen, if you're going to have Simmons and Embiid being your prime pieces, that's fine. You need floor spacing there.
Right.
You need three and D players to put around them, people that can shoot the lights out from the corner. The closest they got with it was the first year with Bellinelli and Ilyasova,
with JJ.
But they couldn't play defense.
Yeah.
So Boston exposed that. I just, you know, it drives me nuts watching the Sixers team play because they're broken. They have four players that are absolute floor destroyers of space.
Mm.
Just pack the paint, you'll beat the Sixers on the road.
Yeah, and that's the tough part.
It is.
Yeah, and you know what? As you just said, man, and I bought into everything, and we don't know how the playoffs is going to play out. We have a good sense of how it is going to play out. But right now, it doesn't look good. Just now that you have the injuries to your young stars, you already have the tough fits with Horford. And while Harris has put up good numbers, Gene, I've been saying this for a while. I like Harris, and Yaron talked about it earlier. The numbers just don't jump off at you when you watch the game.
Let's talk about Tobias, though.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Tobias, though.
Go for it.
So Tobias Harris, Elton Brand, who, by the way, you couldn't be worse than Colangelo, but he's very bad. We made a trade for Tobias Harris. We gave up 2 first-round draft picks and Landry Shamet, and a couple players that we don't have. Mike Scott, we re-signed, but Wilson Chandler's the same player,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You get Tobias Harris, in this trade. And because you lose Jimmy, you're forced to keep him because you couldn't give up all those assets and lose both those players.
Right.
So you max out a player that nobody else is going to max. And if they are going to max him, it's like a non-playoff team that's trying to sell tickets that will sell him and pawn him off a year into the it's
so
awful,
basically,
man.
Basically is let that be their problem, not yours.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's so bad watching the way this team. I love Sixers basketball. I really do, man. It's just it's tough to watch. Like I'm starting to follow the Grizzlies because I would never follow a great team.
Yeah,
I would never do that. But like I like the way Memphis is rebuilding. I would have traded Ben Simmons for Ja Morant, the number two pick in the draft before they drafted Morant, because knowing Zion would have went one, and it would have gave you floor space and it would have gave you a lot more that you needed. It's not saying that Ja is that much better than Ben. It's just more saying that they fit better. And anybody with eyes that knows basketball can see that.
Well,
and I'll give you my good and bad.
Yeah, do that for us, Gene. Yep, go ahead. That's what I was going to ask you.
So my good is Joel Embiid, getting him at third. That injury helped us a ton because Wiggins and Parker, obviously Jabari Parker was a terrible pick, and Wiggins has just been no heart, man. And my bad, there's so many of them. Like you said, Fultz, I could say Tobias Harris. I'll give you Tobias Harris, the whole fiasco with Tobias.
Okay. Gene, great call, man. Really appreciate it. Have a good night. Thanks for the kind words, man. You know I can't do it without you, man. Appreciate it. Tobias Harris, 180. Jerry West, a part of the front office group out in Los Angeles for the Clippers, and Lawrence Frank and many others that they have doing a nice job. I think a lot of people would agree with what they've done to kind of rebuild their face of the franchise with Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and many others making solid moves, having Lou Williams in place, Montrezl Harrell getting him also in that deal with Lou Williams coming from Houston. And they may lose him, but right now he's helping one of the top two teams in the East Western Conference. You also picked up Landry Shamet, the two first-round picks, those types of things. And they only wanted to offer Tobias Harris $80 million. They did offer Tobias Harris $80 million. He turned it down. He gambled on himself, and he gambled right when it came to the money. He got $100 million more. There are many who say he is $100 million overpaid because the 80 was right on point with what Jerry West, even though he wasn't the general manager or the president of basketball operations, he has a title within that front office with Lawrence Frank and others who really run things, and Doc Rivers having a voice also. Can't say that he's wrong. Cannot say that he's wrong with saying Tobias Harris is the worst move on that side. When you talk about the good and the bad of these entire 7 years, pick one of each. You cannot argue that, especially if it really puts you in a bad spot going forward where you have no flexibility and no one's going to want to trade for Tobias Harris. You heard the numbers, of course, from teams like Brooklyn might be interested and some other teams out west in Tobias Harris, and even some here in the Eastern Conference, but the numbers were never going to be that high because they couldn't offer that one. But man, it could sting at the end of the day. It could very well sting if he just simply doesn't pan out the way you want him to. 610-632-0975. Andrew, we'll get to you first, give you all your time on the other side, asking about the rebuild in general, since we had Yaron Weitzman on from Bleacher Report with the new book, talking about the rebuild, and also the bad loss that they had on Saturday night to the Golden State Warriors. Just a terrible loss, 10-24 on the road. Good to have them back here in Philadelphia. And they have, I believe, 11 games remaining at home, 7 on the road now after the loss to the Golden State Warriors. They have one tough one on the road early, 3 at the end. So they really have to continue to win at home, minus Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. So your thoughts overall on speaking with Yaron Weitzman earlier, the loss on Saturday, and one good, one bad over the last 7 years in terms of the moves made by the Philadelphia 76ers. 610-632-0975. Devon Givens with you until midnight right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic. 1046, 97.5, The Fanatic. Josh Ravick is producing. I'm Devon Givens. We are with you until midnight here on 97.5, The Fanatic. 610-632-0975. Flyers back in action tomorrow as they host the Boston Bruins at 7 o'clock. And you can hear that right here on 97.5, The Fanatic. Joe Torti will have that all for you for the pregame and the postgame. Right here on the Fanatic and the Washington Capitals tonight took an L to the Buffalo Sabres. However, it did pick up a point. So they are 1 point up on the Flyers right now in the Metropolitan as the Flyers have 89 points, the Washington Capitals 90 points after taking into a shootout. They pick up the 1 point, so they have one up on the Flyers. So you hope that the Flyers can pick up two tomorrow as they take on the Boston Bruins. It's going to be a tough game. Boston leading the league with 98 points at this moment, 43-14-12 with 98 points. So it should be a very, very good game tomorrow at the center.
Yeah, it's funny that the Capitals currently take over sole possession of first place in the Metro, but there's no question the Flyers are the better team. They've beat them two times in their barn. They've whooped them two times in their barn, and the Capitals are going the distance with the Sabres and losing.
Right.
Yeah, come on.
Well, I mean, hey, you know, you got to find a way to get the W. If the Flyers do it like they did this weekend, good teams win these types of games, right? You win those type of games where you just feel like, and they even had that on Saturday when you're just looking at it, 0-0 after one, then they're up one, they tie it up, and you just look, oh, this game's going to be one of those really close ones that they're tired, they've been playing a long streak. They have nine in a row now after that win. And you say, if they win this one, it's going to be one of those really, really close games.
Yeah, and the Flyers played one of their worst games they've played in recent memory, right? And then they still ran away with it.
Yep, that's just a good team right now, and hopefully, again, they can continue to do that tomorrow, 7 o'clock, right here on The Fanatic, hosting the Boston Bruins. Andrew in Ocean City, been hanging on. Let's check in with Andrew next on The Fanatic. How you doing, Drew?
Hi, Devon. How's it going tonight?
It's going all right, man. How about yourself?
Hey, I'm doing great. Just getting off work. Yeah, I was just gotta say I always enjoy listening to your show when I get off. I'm driving on the way home. You and Joe Torti, you know, you guys do a great job, and I always enjoy listening to the show.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. Thank you.
So a little bit about the Sixers. Obviously, they're not. Well, actually, yeah, they're not performing up to our expectations as a fan base, as a city, you know, the media. Do you think that come playoff time, obviously everything's scrutinized more, everything becomes that much more vital, crucial. Will the Sixers somehow be overlooked, perhaps, going in the playoffs, if they are that late of a seed, you know, a five or a six? You know, obviously, you know, your full focus is playoff time, but is there any way they can kind of fly under the radar a little? Have we adjusted our expectations of them now?
It's a good question. It's a good question. You know how that stuff works overall, where teams start to look past you because you felt like you've disappointed on the season, and the next thing you know. Now, here's the only problem. If you go and take on the Boston Celtics, Andrew, in that first round, you beat them during the season series 3-1, and you beat them. So I don't think they're going to overlook what you've done at all. And when it comes to Jason Tatum, he said it in his rookie year when they played the Sixers in the second round and lost. I will always, you know, it always feels good to beat the Sixers the way that they did in that series because they did not take him number one overall. So it's always going to be a chip on his shoulder if that is the matchup. And in terms of Miami, because that will probably only be the other matchup, you know Jimmy Butler on the other side is going to be ready to go.
Exactly. Yeah, that's very valid there.
It depends on the injuries with Simmons and Embiid as well.
Yeah, if they're not fully healthy, I don't think, does Brown still get another chance to run it back? Can he you use that as an excuse? I don't know.
Yeah, man. And if he doesn't take them a little bit further in the playoffs, he's going to be doing this show with you and I, Andrew.
I like that, Devon. So can I give you my good and bad?
Good and bad for us, man.
All right. So let's start with the negative first. I had to say, I'm going to go way back to when the league basically interfered with the process. And Sam Hinkie kind of got pushed to the side as an assistant. They stripped his GM title and installed the Colangelo fiasco in our front office. I think that has to be my low point because Hinkie didn't really get a fair shake to see his process through.
I hope y'all keep trusting the process.
And wish your what's the other one?
My good is the whole Jimmy Butler trade. I think he taught some, you know, the young guys, Ben, Joel, I think they learned from him. It might not pay off this year, but maybe if they edge a little bit closer to their full prime, I think that they learned some things from Jimmy along the way.
I would hope they did. I hope it carried over into the postseason. Andrew, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate the kind words for me and Joe. Really appreciate it. And those are two good ones. Of course, the NBA interfering for a lot of people was the wrong thing to do, and they may be right. Once again, we will never know. Jimmy Butler trade, very good trade. You wished they would have found a way to keep him because he would certainly help right now. The only question with that, guys, with Jimmy Butler, forget about the Brett Brown part. What about the Simmons part? Simmons disappeared in the playoffs when Jimmy Butler had control of the basketball a lot. Could they have coexisted? Could they have been a 1-2 punch in terms of ball handling? One is a secondary ball handler, put the other in pick and roll. You can do it both ways when it comes to the pick and roll. Could it have worked? It's an unknown. It really is an unknown. Not saying that Simmons is the reason Jimmy Butler is not here. Just throwing out the question, would it have worked? I don't know. We saw it. Could Ben Simmons grow? Could Ben Simmons grow maturity-wise and say, I'm okay with sharing the ball handling responsibilities with Jimmy Butler if it's going to be for the betterment of the team. We can both make the All-Star team. Our record is going to be high. It's going to be hard to keep one of three off the All-Star team. If Butler, Simmons, and Embiid are playing well, there's no way they keep you off. They take three if you're worthy of it, and they would have been worthy of it, in my opinion. Would they have been able to coexist? Could it have happened? I would like to think it could have. But we'll never know. We'll never know. 610-632-0975. Brian in the Northeast checking in with us. What's up, Brian?
Hey, Devon. What's going on?
What's
good show,
man. Thank you.
I'm starting my negative.
Okay.
I think the whole process.
Why so?
I'll be honest. Well, I mean, we didn't do this to maybe be a second seed in the Eastern Conference, right? We did this to be, you know, compete with super teams. Now, I don't think it's possible. I think the NBA is too much of a crapshoot anymore with Euros, young guys coming out. You can't just say, hey, we're going to tank and then be good. No one's done it. It's never worked.
Well, I mean, listen, I was never a fan of it, so I you know where I'm coming from with it, Brian. There's some good things in there. There's some bad things as well, but, of course, you have every right to feel the way you do.
I mean, like, we lost basketball in a city for 5 years to be a six seed.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, you gave up way too much. You know, like, to me, one championship's not enough, to be honest with you. You got to come out with two, at minimum two for the process to be worth it.
And how many players did you feel they should have had from the draft alone?
I mean, they
got two.
They pretty much got everybody wrong but Simmons, because they only took Embiid because they wanted the process to go on longer.
True. Once he injured his foot and they had an opportunity to go that route, yes, that's more time.
If he's not injured, they don't take him.
No, because he's not available.
Right. Well, even if he was available, they don't take him because they wanted the process to go way longer than that, right?
Interesting.
So to me, they only got Simmons right. And, I mean, Markelle Fultz is the worst draft choice in Philadelphia history ever.
Mm.
And it's not even close.
Hard to argue because we're talking about what we're talking about with this whole rebuild and having these extra pieces. He would have been a great extra piece, the Washington Markelle Fultz, and we haven't seen that guy since.
I mean, and what you gave up to get him.
Yep.
I mean, you give up a bunch of, even if you just stand pat, you have pieces to trade.
So do you have a good?
Do I have a good?
Yeah.
For the Sixers?
Yeah, during the 7 years. I mean, they've done some okay. I mean, you used to say, so you're saying Simmons is the good and you just go with that one?
I'll go with their, they got lucky. Well, I don't get lucky. What's their good? Oh, that's a, well, last, the excitement last year. And I think part of the process killed the excitement. You have Embiid, right? Who you have sit for 2 years. And I know the one injury, 1 year, definitely. The second year, he could have came back. Same thing with Simmons. He gets injured. They don't really tell you what it is, and he's out for a whole year. So you tell, you have these two young guys coming in the NBA, telling them, hey, just sit. We're going to get better in a year or two. Now you're in a playoff run, and Embiid has a bellyache, and everybody's shocked that he won't come in the game. Like, I mean, come on. Embiid, the excitement we got last year is the positive for me. But it's tainted by the, I think, the process is why Embiid sits out. He doesn't have that discipline. He doesn't know what it takes to be an NBA player yet. No one's taught him. I think Embiid has a really low basketball IQ. I think Simmons has a really high basketball IQ. I think Simmons won't listen to Brown because he thinks he knows more. And I think, did you see when Embiid wouldn't come off when you had four fouls a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, like, my daughter's basketball team knew that in seventh grade. You got to sit for a minute.
Man, I'm trying to be dumb there.
No, I hear you, man. Brian, thanks for the call, man. That was good stuff overall. Just not a fan at all. You can hear it right there. Brian just simply not a fan of anything that they've done outside of the Simmons part, of course. And he even said it last year was a great run. It was fun. It was exciting. I also like the 16-game winning streak that they had in 17-18 going into the playoffs and beating game one against Miami. That was also fun. So disappointed at how things have played out thus far. Still plenty of time because they have the regular season to try to get things together and then the postseason to do what they've been telling us all season long, wait until the playoffs. Well, I'm sure they're now, of course, the injuries are there, so that's something that gets in the way. But that's all they have at this point, the playoffs. Got to win once you get to the playoffs. 610-632-0975. We continue conversation with the Sixers overall on the other side. 610-632-0975. We just looked at this Jamal Murray dunk on DJ Wilson, Josh and I, and they called a charge. Not right. Not right at all. Josh Ravick, Devon Givens here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
11:03, 97.5 The Fanatic, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast. I'm Devon Givens with you until midnight. Yes, hanging out with Josh Ravick here. 610-632-0975. Get into a lot of good stuff tonight. Is the 76ers a fall the other night to the Golden State Warriors? Unacceptable. We had a good conversation with Yaron Weitzman of Bleacher Report about his new book on the Sixers rebuild, the entire 7 years in general, but a lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff on the 76ers. Good and bad, and that's what we're asking people as well. Good and bad, your one good, your one bad of the entire 7 years. As we are getting ready for the postseason, they will be in for a third straight season, and we know that they are going to be playing in the playoffs. Still, we have no idea who the opponent will be. We know that they went at home, they struggle on the road, all of that stuff. So, I mean, it's only right, as Joe was pointing out earlier, that the book is coming out right around the time where they did what they did in terms of making the moves in the offseason, the back-to-back seasons in the playoffs. Now it's going to be year number three. And they flat out looked at it. I'm sure Yaron and the publishing company and all said, oh, man, when this book comes out, it's going to be crazy. It's, again, to the top, right? Tanking to the top is the name of the book. And again, one of the tweets, one of the texts we got on the text board was, Tanking to the top of what? Because they are still, you know, in a position that they're in. So tanking to the top of what? And Yaron even mentioned that tanking to the top could also mean tanking to the top of four straight second round exits. And he really means three, because they've been in the playoffs for two straight seasons. This will be the third. And if they also exit early in the second round, that's three straight years for them. So it's just one of those deals. It's not the season that we all predicted, but it is not over. It really is not over. And I'm curious to see how things play out overall. 610-632-0975. And as promised, we will share some of the tweets as well, phone calls. But we will share some of the tweets. And let me get a few of them in here before we get back to the phone. 610-632-0975 that we had. Early on, we were asking the question that Josh Raby put out on Twitter. Here's one. Fultz draft was the down point. Could have traded back and got Fox or waited for Fultz. Boston was taking Tatum anyway. Colangelo was brought in to ruin the process. We are back to having a good team, but not good enough to win the chip. Process was a bust so far. Need a coach. That's from GZig21 on Twitter, stating that the Fultz thing was really that bad. Could have got Fox, who was selected at five by Sacramento. If we have concerns about Butler fitting in with Simmons because of the ball handling, that's another point guard. But that's what Markelle Fultz was. He was a combo guard that can play the one and the two, secondary ball handler, while Fox is more of a primary point guard. I'm sure he could play off the ball with his speed and the things that he can also do in open floor and transition and play defense. It would have been a nice one to see with those two guys in the backcourt together. Interesting right there. And I was firmly on Dennis Smith Jr. I was wrong about that based on how his career is going. Jason Tatum was my number two. De'Aaron Fox was right there in the mix when they were at number three until they traded up for Markelle Fultz, which I was on board with at that time. And once again, I was wrong. So there it is. We get some right, we get some wrong. I got that one wrong. Steve from Philly on Twitter says the rebuild, because he knows I want it, I like it, was/is a success. But here he goes with it, Josh. Quote unquote, the process wasn't. The end was supposed to result in signing LeBron James. You remember last year, last summer, not this past summer, two summers ago, LeBron James, a lot of people really believing that LeBron James might sign here, and the rebuild is complete, and we're talking about some NBA Finals appearances like this one this season. He decided to go to Los Angeles. So I wouldn't say it was a failure because LeBron didn't sign here. It didn't need to be LeBron, but it needed to be something with the two players in Simmons and Embiid to help get you over the top, and hopefully with Markelle Fultz, J.J. Redick, however they would have went about it, it needed to happen that way. It did not. And I think it's over, the rebuild. It's about now. It's no longer really about the past. Now, this book is on right on time because it's going to be interesting to read, but it's about now. It really is. Here's one from Ruin Today. It's only Joe. Sticking with the same coach once they started to win. That was the issue. Only person in the organization that was never held accountable when they were losing, as few identified his recurring issues, but not properly using timeouts to stop runs. So many wasted leads with this guy, among other things. So that is right there what Ruin Today is saying about the issues with the entire rebuild. And here we are right now, 6-seed currently with the basketball team. So we have a lot. Markelle Fultz, drafting Markelle Fultz. And once again, I'll read it of what Josh put out there earlier. When you look back at the start of the Sixers rebuild now, what moment stands out the most to you? Was it a partial success with missteps? Will it be a complete disaster without a championship? That was the question earlier. We have a lot of responses, some likes, and so on and so forth. So that's where we're running off. that's where we're running off things. And when we had Yaron on earlier Fernando, Jedi Fernando 57 says, I just pre-ordered the book so I can cry myself to sleep every night. Oh, man.
You don't mess with the man's rituals.
Oh, man. I didn't realize we had this many on here. The Mrs. S.F. Teach. T-E-I-C-H. The Mrs. Not taking Porzingis in the stupid trade with a missed draft pick with the Celtics. Should have had Porzingis, Tatum with Simmons and Embiid. I mean, in hindsight, yes, you say that. I don't know that you would have had them all. But maybe you would have moved on from one at that point, believing that maybe you can get something for Porzingis, maybe Embiid, maybe Simmons, whatever it might have been. That's an interesting four right there. Earlier, I mentioned I wanted Westbrook when he was Thunder Westbrook, when Kevin Durant was there still, and they were seemingly not working out, and we know Kevin Durant left. And Paul Arch 65 says, Westbrook, does PA now have legalized marijuana to go with gambling? Not yet, but I wanted somebody who could just flat out score.
I'm much better at getting high than getting low.
Thank you, Bill. You agree with me. Two UCLA guys. Yes. That's all I was saying. They lack scoring. And that guy was just seemingly ready to just explode as a scorer with nothing holding him back. And we saw that he won the MVP when Kevin Durant left. Now, I didn't think he deserved to win the MVP, even though he averaged a triple-double. But you can see what I was talking about. Surround him with the right pieces. Like now we talk about the shooting with Simmons and Embiid. You give Russell Westbrook some shooting around the perimeter with the ferocious style that he plays, the attacking style going to the rim. You can see something there. So, yeah, Paul, I absolutely wanted Westbrook back at that time. No longer, but that was then, not now. At Illadelph 17, Trip McNeely, Nerlens, bust. Ja, bust. Fultz, bust. Overpaid to play bully ball in a shooter's league. Doesn't make much sense, does it? Okay. Ease underscore private. When they trade up to draft Fultz, worst trade in Philly sports history. So there's that. So we have plenty. At JPT602, keeping Brett this long is ridiculous. Would have won a title last year with a decent coach. I don't know about that. Would they have possibly gotten past the second round? Again, possibly. We don't know for sure. But, Aaron, I understand the frustration in general with Brett Brown. A lot of people felt like after Game 7, even though it took the bounce that it took in order for the Toronto Raptors to beat the 76ers, a lot of people felt like that was a mistake. Pat Egan being one of them, the thinking what else has to happen in order for them to just simply move on. And at this juncture, it looks like that could be the ultimate result for the head coach if they do not, in fact, make it as far as we think they should. Jeff on Twitter, 0BDBZ69, I see failure of poor planning, poor drafting, and poor coaching. The process has been a complete waste of time. I'm not going to say it was a complete waste of time because they did what they did to get some things, and you did. You were able to get Simmons, Land, and Bede. Those are your two cornerstones. But when you look back at everything overall, there were a lot of misses. A lot of misses with this team. James, though, still feels pretty good. Lamberton James. Playoff time is almost here. 76ers is going to make it to the NBA Finals. I'm not seeing it. Not right now. I need to see more on the road. I don't have any issue when they're at home. Yes, they play close games at home as well, but guess what? They find a way to pull those games out and walk away with another W. So at home, I'm not worried. Are they going to lose in the playoffs at home? Sure. Just like I think they will win a playoff game on the road. But consistently winning a playoff game or two on the road in order to win a series is another matter, and I just don't see enough from them right now to do so. Now, if we continue to believe and listen to what Brown and even Elton Brand have said, this team built for the playoffs. All right, but I'm sure when they said the team was built for the playoffs, they weren't eyeing the sixth seed. They were eyeing something a little bit higher where they could have home court advantage because they are so good at home. Embiid and Simmons, unpredictable with the injuries, but all injuries are unpredictable, and you just have to adjust and hope you have the right personnel, the right pieces to overcome that and get by it. But we'll see when Simmons and Embiid ultimately return to the floor. The updates have not done anything in terms of Embiid being reevaluated in the 1 week. He's not back on the floor. Simmons will get an update on him soon, I hope. And they play the Detroit Pistons on Wednesday. Hopefully we get one of those guys back on the floor by Saturday to take on the Indiana Pacers. You're right behind them one game. You need to win them, beat them head-to-head, especially with you so close. The head-to-head matchups are going to come into play when deciding who has, if it's a tiebreaker, you want to win that head-to-head matchup. And I think it's 2-1 right now, if I'm not mistaken, with Indiana beating both, winning both games in Indiana and Sixers winning the one here. At least tie them and worry about the next tiebreaker if it gets to that point. You need those guys. Now, the one thing that I still stand by with when it comes to Simmons, if his back is not right, I do not want to see him out there. I just do not. It's too serious to have him back out there on the floor. It really is. I can't subscribe to that one. If he's not right, he doesn't belong on the floor. I can't. There's too much at stake in the future with him as a player, helping to lead this team with Embiid, that I cannot, at this stage of the season where, yes, I want them to perform well, I want to have hope, but if I really don't, I don't want to jeopardize the future with his back. If it's something that can be corrected and addressed and put him out there and allow him to get beat up in his back with trying to post up guys and they're putting their forearm in it, they're punching him with the forearm in his back. The fact that he plays a certain way offensively where he has to contort his body the way that he does, I just can't have him out there. I can't. Get ready for the next season, unfortunately, or hope Embiid can be that top five level player to help your team advance as far as possible without Ben Simmons on the floor at that point. 610-632-0975. KCam7 says, trading up for Fultz and letting Tatum get drafted by Boston. This could have been franchise altering for this basketball team. Okay. Yep. Could have been. That's why I said that was my one bad one for the Sixers. The one good, Joel Embiid. The one bad, Markelle Fultz. Josh, you have yet to give your good. And you're one bet of the entire rebuild with this basketball team going up to right now. So what are you thinking?
Good. I agree with one of our callers that said Jimmy Butler. I mean, I know that kind of has a bitter taste to it because he's no longer a Sixer, but he was such a perfect fit. And I know the argument at the time, too, was that Harris was a better fit than Butler was. But think about how many times you have two front-running stars who you really can't count on in the fourth quarter to close out a game. And then you have somebody that you can insert in as a number three or number four option that becomes your primary option at the end of a game. And that's what Jimmy Butler was. And that was so key. And you can't help but think, man, if Simmons was as aggressive as he was leading up to the injury this season last year, even though he's not going to put up a crazy amount of points without shooting in the playoffs, him being aggressive would have been a difference maker. Obviously, conditioning and worrying about his diet with Embiid, if you factor any of that in there, I think a lot of us think they get through the Bucks as well. And then with the injuries, the way it worked out with the Warriors, that could have been the year, and Butler would have been the big move for it. There was a lot of bad luck with that. As far as the bad goes, I'm going to have to go with the Horford signing. I mean, as soon as I heard it, I know there's a lot of people that were high on him, but when you lose Butler, everything I talked about, the great things with Butler, there's still that glaring hole of what's going to happen against the good teams in the fourth quarter when you need to go get a bucket. You lost that option, and magically we're expecting, oh, well, Tobias Harris is just going to step in, and he's going to be that guy now.
Oh, that's a great one. I was, as much as we've just talked about Al Horford, I didn't think about, and even someone brought up Tobias Harris. I didn't even put two and two together and say, you know what, Al Horford was the worst thing that has happened or the bad thing that has happened. I'm not going to say it's the worst, but you did, and that's okay, because that's a really good one. right now for the nomination of the good and the bad, one good, one bad for this basketball team. 610-632-0975. Just tough. Tough run right now. But you can feel good about the Flyers and what they're doing and the 9 straight big game tomorrow against Boston. Are you here or are you going to be down there?
I'm going to be back here at the station tomorrow night.
You're going to be locked in. I mean, you're working, so you're always locked in. But, man.
Hopefully going to be busy cutting some serious highlights for the Flyers.
Yeah, for the Flyers. Not on the other side.
Right.
Yeah, no question about it. Maybe get a quick 5-0 shutout against Boston. Man, this place would be going crazy if that happened. Crazy if that happened. 610-632-0975. I saw Henry Ruggs trending. I didn't know what was going on, but we'll see what happens as we talk about the Eagles at some point. Let me give one more before we get out of here and go to break. 610-632-0975. Hip Hop Fan 76 says, Hinkie not having the opportunity to get Embiid on the floor. He makes it that far, he's still here. That's an interesting one. Once Embiid got on the floor, what would have happened? Don't know what would have happened. We don't know. I mean, we just simply do not have any idea of what will happen. Teeny 7940. We had a good team last year, and they were traded all away. Last year's team was destined to go deeper into the playoffs this year. If they were healthy, trading Jimmy and JJ away stands out the most to me. Once again, I think this one Joe read earlier. Jimmy sign and trade just because it worked out the way where you were able to get Josh Richardson back and you needed something in return. JJ signed that contract with the New Orleans Pelicans on the free agent market. As soon as things were legal and able to do so, he was out of here because the pecking order had him third behind Butler and Harris. He was right to do so. You would have liked to have had things straightened out and in play where you were bringing back Jimmy Butler, deciding to bring back J.J. Redick as well, and then, boom, we're rolling with what this team is. Matisse Thybulle coming off the bench, figure out Mike Scott, and figure out James Ennis III if you're going to do that. Maybe you go in another direction if you have those two guys and you just simply don't have to worry about it. A lot of things could have happened in a lot of different ways had they done some stuff just differently, and that's why we're asking one good and one bad for the 76ers during this entire rebuild. One more before break. I said one more. We'll get to Adam as well. Mastermind 7000. The moment stands out is when I saw that Brett Brown was still the coach. That ended the season for me. Wow. The beginning of the year, I know you know, a lot of people were with you, but just bailing out overall, I don't know. I didn't bail out. I was in, and I actually thought that they would get to the NBA Finals, and it's a tough road ahead of them now. I felt like if they didn't get to the NBA Finals, it was a failure, and he would be the one that takes the hit, Brett Brown, and that is still up in the air. But it does not look good right now because these guys can't win on the road. They're going to have a tough one starting things off in the first round if it is Miami or Boston away from Philadelphia in round one. 610-632-0975. The quarterfinals will get underway right around April 18th. So it'll be 18th and 19th. I'm guessing the Sixers will start on the 18th at this point because while they still are a marquee matchup with Boston or even Miami, if the guys are not healthy, things don't look good. It might be an early exit. But I look forward to the playoffs still. I want them to close out these 18 the right way. 11 at home, 7 on the road. What do you guys think in general? 610-632-0975. Josh Rabig is producing. I'm Devon Givens running until midnight right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
1129 97.5 The Fanatic, 610-632-0975. Josh Rabig is producing the show. I'm Devon Givens with you until midnight. I had fun with Joe Torti from 8 to 10. Joe doing a great job from 6 to 10 overall. Josh doing a phenomenal job today producing from 2 o'clock this afternoon until midnight. And it always starts before the show, so we're not doing Josh any justice by saying 2 o'clock. He's been helping to get the show together from a little bit earlier than that, and last-minute duties as well. So, fantastic job, and thank you so much.
I got two words for you. I'm staying right here.
All right, you can stay a little bit longer overnight if you want. I'm leaving. So, but I was trying to give you some props for what you've done today. But great job, man. Josh Rabig producing the show. Mike Missanelli Show with Tyrone Johnson. And for Mike, and then, of course, Joe Torti, and closing out with Joe, Josh, and I tonight here until midnight. 610-632-0975. And he's coming back tomorrow to produce the game and the show tomorrow in Flyers as they take on the Boston Bruins. Let's go back to the
phones. Remember, because I drink?
Yes, that's okay. You're allowed. You earned that one. 610-632-0975. And we'll try to squeeze in a few more of those tweets because we have a lot of them. Let's go to the phones and check in with Adam in Germantown on 97.5. What's up, Adam?
Hey, Devon. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, of course, man. Thank you.
I wanted to make one point, but real quick. Your question is the good and the bad of the quote process?
Yeah, one of each.
Okay. I would say the bad, I'm sorry to say, is, you know, with all the difficulties that Joel Embiid had ahead of the draft and all the teams that had red flagged him, yeah. I'm sorry. Like, picking him has been, he's Mark Jackson called him a game time decision every night. He's not a game time decision. He's a weak time decision every week. You don't know what's with him. You know, I mean, you can go by the statistics. He's played 41% of his career games. It's just like they knew from the start picking him was a red flag for every team. David Griffin one time talked on national radio and said, I was interested in picking him, but my owners wouldn't allow it. Well, you know, I think, yeah, for me, that was something. It's just the guy is more sizzle than steak. But just because he can't stay on the court. The biggest ability is availability. That's a really important thing. And
it is.
The guy, you can't count on it. I'm going to say the best thing about this rebuild, and this you'll be surprised at, is the good-heartedness of Elton Brand and Brett Brown and what they did for Markelle Fultz by sending him to Orlando. And Jeff Weltman, the president, when he first spoke about him, when I heard him speak, I could see that they were going to dig him out of the hole that had started here when the Sixers tried to fit him in as a square peg into a round hole. And they tried to make him a combination guard / shooting guard next to Ben Simmons. If Ben Simmons hadn't been here, he would have been able to play his natural position as point guard. And that's what he does in Orlando. And he's comfortable and he's growing as a player. If you've watched him, I'm sure you have at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best thing they've done, even though it was for another team. And they got some cap space in return because Jonathan Simmons basically quit playing basketball once he got his $3 or $27 million deal. But he only had $1 million in the final year, so the Sixers used that cap space.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I wanted to mention was watching the Clippers and the Lakers play yesterday. Only health can stop the Lakers from winning the championship, in my opinion, because Anthony Davis and LeBron James, to me, are reminding me of Wilt Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor in their prime. I have never seen a more smooth LeBron James on playing both ways, and I have never seen a better Anthony Davis than I have ever seen right now this year.
Yeah,
the way he's he is rolling. Playing defense is so intense, and the way they're, that team, the supporting cast, is going after it, I think they can win 16 straight playoff games.
I wouldn't say 16, but they'll run through it. Adam, thanks for the call. They look like they're really tough to beat, and yes, they got their the Lakers-Clippers thing is going to be interesting if they make that to the Western Conference Finals with both of those teams. That's going to be a fantastic watch. No question about it. 16, no, but I understand where you're coming from. They have been that good. Clippers also have been good. So we'll see how that all plays out West. It's going to be an interesting playoffs in general. The eighth seed run for the West, while it really means nothing because they're going to get rocked by the Lakers in round one, the drama of it going down to the wire at the end of the season is always something that's fun to keep an eye on. And the Eastern Conference at the end, not so much. It's almost as if you just like, all right, whatever, just get in there, Orlando, get in there, Brooklyn, and we'll see you next year. Four straight. 610-632-0975. He said drafting Joel Embiid was the bad move because of some of the things that he does, Adam pointed out, with the lack of conditioning that he doesn't take serious, and availability is the best ability. That's one thing that I hear Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, who does a fantastic podcast and great writer covering the league. He always says that availability is the best ability, and oftentimes Joel Embiid is not available. And you can load manage him to give him the rest because he's openly talked about just being ready, getting healthy for the playoffs. Now the shoulder injury, it may not be anything by the time the playoff comes around. I'm sure he'll have maybe one of those short sleeve compressions on, or some of the KT tape on there, or both, whatever it might be. If we can see him healthy, that would be great, but it's still going to be tough to predict a good run without Ben Simmons on the floor as well. We saw it with Simmons without Embiid in the first playoff series that they had against the Miami Heat two playoffs ago. Let's see what happens if Simmons is not available for this one and Joel Embiid is the man in charge and they're starting on the road. 610-632-0975. They had the luxury of being at home as the number three seed the last two playoff series seasons. Aaron and King of Prussia next on the Fanatic. Aaron, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going all right.
Yeah, I got a couple of comments. One is on the Sixers. You know, them losing on the road, I think, is just a product of them being two things. One of them is you have a soft, the coach is soft and the players are soft. It takes a mentality to go and win on the road. And I think getting back to your question, you know, you introduced a losing culture in here for years, and I don't think we've gotten rid of that. So, I mean, you have to set expectations. When you're on the road, I think a lot of times the Sixers go in the fourth quarter and they're playing like the Warriors and they're up 4 points and they're satisfied because they're up. But you have to set expectations when you're on the road that, listen, we got to come in and we need to be up at least on bum teams. You got to be up at least like 10 or 15 points in the fourth quarter. You can't let it go to the fourth quarter, especially with the three pointer. Any team that gets hot is going to win that game. It doesn't matter who the best team is. You got a couple threes and the whole game is shifted around. So I think, in general, introducing a losing culture is really hurt the Sixers because they don't have a winning culture. It's something like where the team just gets up and says, listen, we got it. You know, we're not going to be losing. It's not acceptable to lose winning nine games all season on the road.
And part of my problem is just wondering if they have it upstairs mentally, you know, the toughness to fight through those tough situations, to win those games, man. Got to win those games.
You know, back in the day when you play in street ball, you can win on your home court. But when you go down to West Philly and you go to North Philly, you got to have a different mindset. We're not getting no calls. They're not going to give us no calls. If we're going to win up North Philly or West Philly, we're going to go out here and win. We got to have a whole different tough mindset to come in here and win this game and play on their court and take something from them because they're not trying to give it up. And that's just a mindset that you got to get. That's got to be. And I don't think the coach has it or the players have it.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's really stood out overall. Aaron, thanks so much, man, for the call. Really appreciate. Hold up, did you give the good?
The good? about the Sixers is over the seven years, putting the team together. I'm a unique person. They got good players. I think they got some good players from it. And I'm a unique person. I don't agree. I think the process can work, but I still don't agree with the way that you did it. I think that's a cheap way out to try to get players. But I think it can work. So I think they did get great. They did get some really good players that they can win with. So that's the good about it. And I like Embiid. With all his inconsistencies and getting hurt, I still like Embiid.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like there. I am one of them. Thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it. I really am. I'm still a fan of his, and I want him to be healthy because a lot of their success going forward, mainly in the playoffs. I mean, the regular season, we get on him and all that, but it's about the postseason, and he keeps talking about being healthy for the postseason. A lot of what they do relies on him, and he is very good, but he needs to be available to play in order for them to take the steps that they want. Final segment coming up on the other side. We'll, again, mix in some of the tweets, get in our final phone calls. Josh Rabig is producing. I'm Devon Givens. Final segment coming up on the other side here on 97.5 Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Final segment for us here tonight on 97.5 The Fanatic. Josh Rabig, Devon Givens here with you until, of course, midnight as we sign off in just about 9 minutes. Programming note, Joe Torti will be in tomorrow. Tomorrow night, I will be off. I'll be back on Wednesday live from the center ahead of Sixers Pistons basketball. Brian Seltzer of Sixers.com. Me and B. Seltz back at it again for another edition of Sixers and 60. I'm sure we'll talk a lot about Shake Milton and what he was able to do during that West Coast trip, how well he played overall, some other things. Hopefully we'll have some news about Embiid and Simmons and their health going forward. Good to have the Sixers back at home. I believe they have three, and then they hit the road for another. I have to check that. I'm just guessing because I know they have Detroit, Indiana, I think Atlanta, I want to say, on Monday. So Indiana on Saturday. I want to say the Sixers have Atlanta on Monday. As I take a peek before we get to the phones with Chris, it is absolutely, no, I'm wrong. Detroit, Indiana, Washington, Toronto, at Charlotte, back at home for Atlanta on March the 21st.
Okay. Washington?
Yes, Washington. Joey Stays. Thank you. It was good to see Joey on Friday doing the show with Joey Stazak. So Detroit, Indiana, Washington, Toronto. They have four games at home where they can pick up some W's. They are currently standing in the column of 38-26, still third in the Atlantic, sixth in the Eastern Conference. Detroit, Wednesday. Indiana, Saturday. Washington, Monday. And Toronto Wednesday. That would be Wednesday, of course, of next week. Charlotte on the second night of that back-to-back away. And then Atlanta back at home before they hit the road for Minnesota and Chicago, Phoenix, Portland, Houston, back here in Philadelphia. So some winnable games for the team. Can they get it done? Let's see how it all plays out. We are still rooting for them, right? I am. Chris in Williamstown next on the Fanatic. Chris, what's happening, man?
You know, Devon, always a pleasure to talk to you, man. Pleasure to be one of your last callers and end out the show on a high note.
Yes, thank you.
You know, I'm trying to make this good. You know, I was sitting here during the break, and I was sitting here thinking about, you know, Al Horford's time at Boston, and really how after Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, Rajon Rondo, and Kevin Garnett left, like, I don't think Boston ever really was legitimately a contender after those guys all departed. And, you know, whether it was Elwark, whether it was Mark, the current group assembled, Terry Rozier getting moved to Charlotte. Like, I actually think Boston took a step back losing those two guys. But in the same respect, now that I see Al Horford here in Philadelphia, he shows you glimpses at times. But whether it's him or Tobias Harris, like, I just don't see that vampire tooth mentality that I see out of, like, when I watch Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid go down the court. And those guys should be glad they're not taking any real criticism right now, because criticism is on the guys on the court right now. But you see them come out, and like when they throw a dunk down, they turn around and they roar at the crowd. I don't get that feeling about any of the vets. And I try to give the rookies a chance to say, okay, they need to develop shake, court minds. Like, but when I look at, like, whether it's Kyle O'Quinn, whether it's Al Horford, Tobias Harris, Josh Richardson, Mike Scott, none of those guys really look like they look like they want to win. It just, I hate to say this, and I hate to be like tough question, but they look like they're collecting a paycheck at this point. I really think Boston saw the writing on the wall with Al Horford that it might have been his time to go out gracefully. I think it was a sham that he got 5 years and $100+ million from the Sixers, because I really don't think he's ever going to be worth that if he stays around for the term of his contract. He's never going to be worth that $100 million, no matter what, especially now coming off the bench.
And what was your, I'll share my thoughts, but what was your one good thing that you felt like happened over the time?
The good thing, really...
anything. Could be anything. Like I said, drafting Joel Embiid.
I think it,
drafting Joel Embiid was a good thing.
I think it was that. I think it was the way Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid kind of, they tried to show that, like, they were trying to get better. Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid especially, but Ben Simmons more, because I know he doesn't shoot, but for some reason, like, he looks a little bit more aggressive, even on offense, as much as defense. I don't know. Like, I sit there and watch. I've been watching a lot of the games back. I think Ben Simmons has a revised thing. Like, when he comes back, look for Ben Simmons to be a lot more aggressive.
Well, I don't know how aggressive with the back issue, man. That's going to be a tough one, Chris, to really...
I hope.
Yeah, let's hope so. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. It's going to be tough. Now, as far as just elaborating on what Chris said with the aggressiveness and the ferocity that he's asking for from Horford and O'Quinn and Mike Scott, Tobias Harris, to be perfectly honest with you, Chris, it's just not their personality. It's not what they do when they dunk and make noise and scream and stare at the crowd. Tobias did it the other day. That's about it. I've seen him do it a few times. Horford, it's not him. Mike Scott doesn't get many dunks, but he'll stare. He may not scream. And Kyle O'Quinn just doesn't play enough minutes to do so. And if he does it, people are probably going to be like, why are you doing that? You don't play much, but that kind of thing. So that's just not their personality, Chris. That would be my answer. Scott in Barrington will be our final caller of the night. Haven't heard from Scotty in a while. What's going on, man?
Brother, dude, what's going on, man? Just getting off of work here.
Oh, man, good.
Glad you're a shop right, man. But
glad you snuck in. Thank you.
No doubt. Always enjoy listening to you, man. Not the love for you. We go back a long way, Brother D.
Yes, we do. A lot of Sixers conversations from the rebuild to where they are right now.
Yes, sir. And the Fanatic Fan Fest, not a good thing. Real quick, Brother D, I'm going to just have you say yay or nay so you can get up out of there, you and your producer. Even when Ben Simmons comes back, about Shake, where's the point? Once again, Brother D, this is the answer piece. God bless you, man.
Oh, you too, man. Have a great night, man. Thanks for the call. Yes, Shake Milton, I've said this, Scotty. I feel like that he should be in the starting lineup with Simmons, Richardson, Harris, and Embiid. Horford remains coming off the bench with Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson III, Matisse Thybulle, Mike Scott. However, Brett Brown decides to go with that rotation of guys for the Philadelphia 76ers. That's what I'm looking at. Philly Daz says on Twitter, yes, it is a disaster without a championship, I'm guessing he's saying. The turning point was trading up to get Markel. The second turning point was trade all those assets for Tobias Harris, who had never been an all-star. And we have so many other ones, man. Brian Colangelo is one that we got here. Realizing Fultz was a bust. Drafting Markel Fultz. Didn't have to let Butler go. He chose to leave. That's a conversation that's still going on with someone else. I should have built around Jimmy and Simmons, even at the expense of Embiid. and so many others. The good is Ben Simmons. The bad was firing Hinkie and hiring Colangelo. He rushed along the process, tricked off all of our assets we accumulated. That's from Big Slim OA. That's a great one, man. And picking Brett over Jimmy, Fultz over Tatum, hiring Sam, pushing Sam out. That's the good and the bad. got it. Well, listen, what I got is a great producer tonight. Joe Torti and I did, and that is Josh Rabick. Thanks so much, man, for doing a fantastic job all day.
You got it, dude.
And we thank you. Thank Joe Torti for allowing us to share some time. And thanks to Yaron Weitzman for joining the show to talk about his new book, Tanking to the Top. Thanks to Pat Egan for help coordinate that with Yaron as well. I will talk to you once again on Wednesday starting at 6 o'clock live from the center along with Brian Seltzer. We'll be right by the 11th Street atrium, so come on by and say hello. So for Josh Rabick, I'm Devon Givens. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.